Police believe Matthew Pike knew his killer. They're now examining the possibility that they met on the internet.
Nottingham, which is located in the East Midlands region of England, has a rich history that dates back to at least the 6th century. It gained prominence in medieval times as a centre for the production of textiles and lace, contributing significantly to England's economy. It progressed over the years, becoming a hub that boasts of a vibrant cultural scene, with theatres, music venues, and art galleries. One of the key institutions of the city is Nottingham Trent University, a dynamic and fast-forward-thinking university with a strong reputation for excellence in teaching and research. The university traces its origins back to the 19th century, but has evolved over the years to become one of the UK's leading universities. Students in Nottingham reside in a variety of accommodations scattered throughout the city, ranging from university halls to privately rented apartments. The city boasts a plethora of bars and restaurants, ensuring that there's always something happening at night, from local pub quizzes to karaoke nights. For those who opt for local rentals, proximity to the city centre is always a key factor. North Sherwood Street, in particular, was a favoured location among students due to its affordable Victorian-era flats and close proximity to both the university and the bustling city centre. On the 19th of September 2008, Naomi Rogers was making her way back to her shared flat on North Sherwood Street. Having recently relocated from St. Anne's, Naomi had chosen North Sherwood Street with the belief that it offered a safer environment. Her decision had stemmed from a scary experience in St. Anne's, where she had been mugged. The street's popularity among students was evident, but as Naomi neared the Orange Tree pub, she was met by a scene of disarray. Flashing lights illuminated the area, with police cars lining the streets and cordons preventing access. Matthew Pike was born to parents Kim and William on the 23rd of August in 1988. The family chose to settle down in Stowmarket, a quaint and picturesque town nestled in Suffolk, England. As the youngest member of the family, with an older brother named Adam, Matthew brought joy and laughter into their lives from the very beginning. Described by his parents as an easygoing baby, child and teenager, Matthew possessed a quiet and reserved demeanour, yet his sharp wit and infectious humour never failed to brighten the atmosphere at home. His magnetic personality extended beyond the confines of his family, as he was known among his friends as the ultimate joker, somebody who was always ready to lighten the mood. One of his closest friends, Andy, fondly recalled, "This guy was one of my best friends at school. He was a great and very intelligent guy, a wicked sense of humour and friends who loved him." Matthew attended Combs Middle School in Stowmarket, where he left a lasting impression on both his peers and teachers alike. The school's head teacher, Ian Crissell, fondly remembered Matthew, describing him as a very conscientious student and liked by all members of staff. Then as Matthew entered his teenage years, his fascination with computers deepened. He delved into web design and developed a keen interest in journalism. As his mother recalled, "We didn't know anything he did on the computer. We just know he was good on anything to do with computers. He was obsessed with it, really." Matthew had always been drawn to video games, from classics like Game Boy and PlayStation to computer-based games. However, his true obsession ignited when he discovered Advance Wars, a video game that debuted on the Game Boy Advance in 2001 and rapidly gained popularity. In Advance Wars, players command various military units on grid-based maps, engaging in strategic battles against enemy forces. The gameplay involves capturing cities and bases, deploying units strategically, managing resources and exploiting terrain advantages to gain victory. Matthew could spend hours immersed in the game, liking it to a more technical version of chess. The player takes on the persona of a commanding officer, and then chooses from a lineup for different characters, each with their own special abilities and weaknesses. Matthew relished the challenge of playing against opponents from across the world, gradually building up his army and honing his strategic skills. The game boasted a substantial fan base, and Matthew actively engaged with various online forums dedicated to it. Under the Elias shade, he eagerly shared his insights and strategies with fellow enthusiasts. Alongside his gaming pursuits, Matthew showcased his prolific writing skills in the field of science fiction by contributing to fanfiction.net. Then at the age of 16, Matthew crossed paths with a girl his own age on a forum dedicated to Advance Wars. Her name was Joanna, and she came from Selby in Yorkshire. Instantly hitting it off, Matthew eagerly anticipated their daily online conversations, often rushing home from school to connect with Joanna online. Their connection flourished, prompting Matthew to make the journey to Selby under the guise of meeting a friend for a concert. He was a little bit embarrassed to admit the truth to his parents. However, upon meeting Joanna in person, their chemistry was undeniable, and they quickly transformed their relationship from virtual to real world. As their bond deepened, they introduced each other to their respective families, both sets of parents unanimously declaring them the perfect match. Much like Matthew, Joanna shared a passion for computers, and they often spent late nights immersed in Advance Wars together. As the first 3 years of their relationship flew by, the couple found themselves graduating and preparing to embark on their university journey. They wanted to be together permanently, so made the decision to both enroll at Nottingham Trent University. So by 2008, life was brimming with promise for 20-year-old Matthew Pike. He and Joanna had recently settled into a Grade 2 listed Victorian flat above the Orange Tree Pub on North Sherwood Street in the city of Nottingham. Matthew had also just taken the leap to pursue a degree in computer science at Nottingham Trent University, which was scheduled to begin in October of 2008. He had previously studied physics, but realised that it wasn't for him, and that computer science would be a much better fit. As for Joanna, she was studying environmental science, and she worked part-time as a sales assistant at Rohan. In Nottingham, Matthew and Joanna enjoyed a simple yet fulfilling life. They both held part-time jobs, with Matthew working as a teaching assistant as part of a placement under the university's Student Associates scheme. While they lived above a bar and just a stone's throw away from many others, they preferred to stay at home. They sometimes went for walks during the day, but they much preferred to be in each other's company rather than partying. At night, the young couple liked to read books or curl up in front of the television to watch Top Gear and QI. But life for Matthew and Joanna would soon take a dramatic turn. On the evening of the 19th of September 2008, Joanna was returning to the flat she shared with Matthew after her workday. Turning the corner, her eyes caught the sight of the familiar facade of the pub below, its lights and activity brightening up the otherwise dark road. She walked up the staircase to the first floor and fumbled in her handbag for her keys. She inserted the key into the lock and turned it. When she opened up the door, she was surprised to see that the flat was engulfed in darkness. Matthew should have been at home, but the darkness and quietness told her otherwise. It wasn't like Matthew to not let her know if she was going out somewhere. The only sound that Joanna could hear was distant murmurs of voices from the pub below. Joanna switched on the lights, but the illumination unveiled a trail of blood. Joanna's heart pounded in her chest as she called out to Matthew, but was met by silence. Joanna stepped forward, with her gaze fixed on the trail of blood. He led her towards the bedroom, where blood was spattered on the walls and smeared across shoes and trainers. As Joanna drew closer to the bedroom, her eyes were drawn to the crumpled figure on the floor. It was Matthew, dressed only in his dressing gown, his body surrounded by a pool of blood. Joanna rushed to his side and reached out to touch him, only to recoil at how cold his body was. Her eyes frantically searched for any sign of life, but it quickly became clear that Matthew was dead. There were stab wounds peppered all across his body. Joanna reached for her mobile phone and immediately called 999. The paramedics were the first to arrive, but it was clear that nothing could be done for Matthew. He had evidently been dead for some time. The police arrived shortly thereafter, followed by forensic experts. Matthew's body was documented and photographed before he was transported to the mortuary, where it was discovered that he had sustained 86 stab wounds. The flat was cordoned off with crime scene tape, while two uniformed officers stood guard outside. The perimeter was extended from the junction of shakes, securing the area from prying eyes. Inside the flat there was no forced entry, indicating that the killer had been let in by Matthew himself. The living room had been ransacked, and it appeared as though several items had been stolen. On the side of the computer, the forensic experts noticed something written in blood. It was the letters D, A, and V. Based on the blood evidence inside the flat, it appeared as though Matthew had been attacked as soon as he opened up the front door. He was then pursued throughout the flat by the killer, as he fought desperately for his life. As he collapsed close to the bedroom, the killer appeared to kneel beside him and continue their attack. Initially, there was speculation of a robbery gone wrong, but as detectives meticulously pieced together the evidence, doubts began to surface. The ransacking, although chaotic, seemed haphazard, with valuable items left untouched. It became increasingly clear to detectives that Matthew had been deliberately singled out, and the chaos within the home was a calculated attempt to mislead detectives. Detective Chief Inspector Tony Hayden, who was leading the investigation, commented, "We are exploring all possible avenues to establish who is responsible for Matthew's murder. One line of inquiry is that this was not a random attack, and that Matthew may have known the person who attacked him." As the investigation intensified, detectives diligently combed through CCTV footage from the vicinity of the flat. They were hopeful that a camera might have captured the movements of Matthew's killer, either approaching the scene or hastily departing from it. Given the frenzied nature of the murder, which included 86 stab wounds, the killer would likely be drenched in blood. In a bid to broaden their search, detectives issued a public appeal, urging anyone who may have spotted an individual with a blood-stained face, body, or clothing to come forward quickly. Meanwhile, as detectives delved deeper into their investigation, they sought out Joanna to glean additional insights into Matthew's life. Their aim was to uncover any potential enemies or persons who might have harboured ill intentions towards him. There was one person who struck out in Joanna's mind immediately, and it just so happened that the first three letters of their name had been written in blood on the side of the computer. Joanna told detectives that she and Matthew had set up their own forum, which was named War Central, and was dedicated to the game Advanced Wars. There were around 50 devoted fans of the game, who actively participated in the discussions on the forum. But over time, this virtual community burgeoned to a melting pot of friendships, drawing enthusiasts from various corners of the world. It evolved beyond a mere platform for game-related discourse, and weaved itself into the fabric of their daily lives. Let's talk hydration. With summer creeping up on us, we all have our little tricks. Some carry around these massive water bottles or giant Stanley cups, constantly needing a refill like clockwork. Sometimes I'll go through the day forgetting to drink anything, then suddenly chugging 3 glasses of water before bed. If that sounds like you, it's time for you to look into 310 Nutrition. They've got the hydration game down to a T. Think water enhancers that turn plain old H2O into something delicious and nutritious. And their lemonade mixes? Pure magic, minus all the sugar guilt. Plus, they've got these all-in-one shakes that make hitting the gym a breeze. Personally, I can't get enough of their strawberry electrolyte mix. It's like a sip of summer in every gulp. And don't even get me started on their peach pear lemonade. It's practically heaven in a glass. They've got a lineup of flavours and they're always rolling out new ones. Plus, as someone who battles with bloat now and then, their products have been a game changer. Right now, 310 is celebrating a new year of goals with the code Morbidology and giving my listeners 50% off up to $100 for your first order. With so many sample packs, new products, it's really fun and easy to put together an order or start a subscription on products that you know you'll use. Go to 310nutrition.com and use the code Morbidology right now for 50% up to $100 for your first order. That's 310.com and promo code Morbidology. Participants freely shared snippets of their personal narratives, transcending gaming to touch upon topics as diverse as relationships, family dynamics, current events, and academic pursuits. The forum had fostered genuine connections, underscoring the profound impact of online interactions. However, amidst this, it remained an inherent truth that the identities behind digital avatars often obscured the true nature of individuals. It was mostly a male-dominated world, and as the only woman in the forum, Joanna was a hit with the men. Among the online community of Advanced Wars enthusiasts was a man who went by the username Eagle the Lightning. While Matthew and Joanna didn't have extensive knowledge about Eagle the Lightning, they knew that he was German and that his first name was David. Through Joanna's interactions with David, she discovered he had a troubled past. His parents had abandoned him at the tender age of 10, leaving him to be raised by his grandmother. Joanna empathised with David's story, and their conversations soon transitioned from the public forum to private messages. Despite David's expressed interest in pursuing more than a friendship, Joanna remained loyal to her relationship with Matthew. Undeterred by Joanna's commitment to Matthew, David persisted in his pursuit. Seeking to deepen their connection, he sought out Joanna on Facebook. Upon viewing her profile photo, David found himself captivated. Joanna embodied everything that he admired, from her love for computers and video games to her kindness. Plus, Joanna had red hair, and David had a thing for redheads. This only fueled his desire to learn more about her and ultimately pursue a romantic relationship. One afternoon, upon logging on to the forum, Joanna was confronted with a message from David telling her that he had a crush on her. Joanna replied, "I'm flattered, but nothing will come of it. I've been with Matthew for 2.5 years. It was evident that Joanna wasn't interested, but David's persistence knew no bounds. He bombarded Joanna with incessant inquiries about Matthew's whereabouts and their relationship status, refusing to accept her rejection. Driven by an insatiable desire to possess every detail of Joanna's life, David delved into the depths of social media. He utilised his computer skills to unearth information about her past, education, and even her social circle. He found her online journal and read through every single page. Joanna's sense of privacy was shattered as David's relentless stalking extended beyond the confines of the online forum. Then on the 3rd of May 2008, Joanna was met with yet another unsettling intrusion into her personal space. David had posted a handwritten letter on the forum that was addressed to Joanna, professing his unwavering devotion. He had written, "I love you, Jojo, more than anything else in my life. I shouldn't, but I can't help it. And to be honest, it's a great feeling. You're my first thought when I wake up, and my last when I go to sleep." Joanna was horrified to see that the letter contained references to intimate aspects of her life, such as her school, friends, and hobbies. It became apparent that David's knowledge was gleaned from his invasive online surveillance. But this was only the beginning of his disturbing obsession. Although Matthew found David's interest in his girlfriend irritating, he chose to overlook it. Both he and Joanna believed that David meant no harm, assuming he would eventually realise this himself. However, David's infatuation with Joanna persisted, and it escalated over time. Eventually, he managed to obtain Joanna's mobile number, and called her on the 13th of June, claiming that he only wished to discuss forum matters. Then the following day, while Matthew and Joanna were on vacation in Devon with her parents, David seized the opportunity to gather more information about them. He began messaging other forum members privately, attempting to ascertain their whereabouts. He had gathered that they lived above a pub in Nottingham, close to a park, but he wasn't sure of the exact location. He had searched on Google Maps, but there was a handful of places that matched the description. So David reached out to a man named Gavin Sillett on the forum, who claimed not to know their whereabouts, at least at first. However, as their conversation unfolded throughout the day, Gavin eventually disclosed Matthew and Joanna's address to David. That night, David posted on the forum his intention to travel to Nottingham on the 21st of June, a post that Matthew and Joanna missed since they were still on holiday. Their knowledge of David's plans only surfaced on the 20th of June, when another member of the forum, James Mellor, texted them about it. They brushed it off as a joke, thinking that David would never actually make the trip over. After all, he barely knew either of them. Or at least so they thought. The couple's doubts dissolved when they returned home on the 21st to find a man sitting outside the pub below their flat. He approached them and told them that he was David, aka Eagle the Lightning. Matthew warmly welcomed David inside, but Joanna couldn't shake her apprehension. David had been unsettling her for months, and finding him outside their flat only heightened her unease. Despite Matthew's hospitality, Joanna began reaching out to local hotels to find alternative accommodations for David. But unfortunately, everything was already booked up for the night. Matthew told David that he could stay in their flat for the night, and they would help him find a hotel first thing in the morning. When Matthew left the room, David told Joanna that he hoped he hadn't given her the wrong impression, and that he wanted to keep seeing her. She told him that he wasn't weird, but that he had freaked her out a little bit since he had managed to find out where she lived. That night, Joanna found it difficult to sleep. Her mind was consumed by worries about David, who was sleeping on the floor at the foot of her bed. In the middle of the night, she sat up in bed and glanced over towards David. He was staring directly at her, and she wondered if he had been doing that the entire night. The following morning, Joanna informed David that she had booked him into a room at the local Premier Inn. Matthew and Joanna tried to steer clear of David while he was in Nottingham, and he reached out to several other members of the forum. Some of them agreed to meet with him, but it soon became clear to them that the only thing he wanted to talk about was Joanna. Following David's trip to Nottingham, his fixation on Joanna only intensified, a behaviour noted by other forum members. Each interaction with them on the forum seemed to revolve solely around Joanna and how much he loved her, causing discomfort among the forum members. Some of them chatted amongst themselves, and they all said the same thing. That David was weird, and they needed to get rid of him. David eventually caught on that he was being spoken about by the other forum members, and it made him furious. But his anger was solely directed at Matthew. One day, David had messaged another forum member a list of people who he said needed to be erased. At the top of the list was Matthew, and David had said, "Seriously, the whole thing will end in at least one of us three dying." He then added, "I'm developing a strong desire to grab his head and smash it against a wall." Then on the 16th of July, David made another reappearance in Nottingham. By this point, Matthew was acutely aware of how David's presence affected Joanna. Learning that David had actively sought out their address and continued to focus on Joanna in his online interactions only confirmed his obsession. When David showed up at their flat again that afternoon, Matthew bluntly instructed him to leave and to never contact him or Joanna again. 2 days later, David returned to Germany. Soon after, Matthew took to the forum to list 19 reasons why he hated David. He had written, "I hate you because you decided to come into our lives. I hate you for ever laying eyes on the girl I have dedicated my life to. I hate you for your desperation." However, David persisted, continuing to pester other forum members and prying for information about Matthew and Joanna. Then on the 31st of July, he borrowed his uncle's car and drove to Nottingham through the Channel Tunnel. In the early hours of the following morning, at around 2:45 a.m, he was involved in a car accident on the M11 North. Colliding with an HGV, David's uncle's car veered off the road and into a field. Sustaining a wrist injury, David was attended to by an ambulance and spent the night in the hospital. While here, he also spoke with police and claimed that he was en route to see his girlfriend in Nottingham. Despite his car being totaled, David remained undeterred. After being discharged from the hospital the following morning, he promptly boarded a train to Nottingham. Upon arrival, he headed to an internet cafe, where he contacted Gavin, another forum member, claiming that he was in Nottingham to see Joanna. Despite Gavin's attempts to reason with him, labelling his behaviour as stalker-like, David persisted. Gavin immediately reached out to Matthew and warned him that David was back in Nottingham. When Joanna disembarked from the bus near her flat that afternoon, she was shocked to find David waiting for her. She fled in fear, managing to reach the safety of her flat, but David continued to reach out to both her and Matthew. The following day, Matthew and Joanna reluctantly agreed to meet David at a local park, hoping to persuade him to leave them alone for good. However, when they arrived, they were met with David's emotional distress. Despite struggling to communicate through tears and dry heaves, Joanna firmly reiterated her lack of interest in him. It appeared that David finally understood. He left Nottingham the next day and returned home to Germany. Matthew and Joanna believed that they had seen the last of him, but they soon realised that shaking him off wouldn't be that easy. As soon as David landed back in Germany, he began to repeatedly call Joanna, prompting her to block him. David was furious and started to bombard her with messages and threats via other formats. He told her that if she continued to ignore him, there would be consequences. Have you ever tried kicking a habit and felt like you were wandering through a maze with a blindfold on? I've been there. But guess what? Enter Fume. It's not about giving up, it's about switching up. Fume isn't just another vapor device. It's like a breath of fresh air. Literally. Instead of filling your lungs with vapor, it treats you to these amazing flavored airs that are as natural as a breeze. No electronics, no nasty chemicals, just pure delightful flavors. From that classic crisp mint, to unique ones such as maple pepper and white cranberry. The fume device is crafted from real wood, and has these cool movable parts and magnets. It's perfect for people like me who can't keep still. And they even throw in a magnetic stand so you won't be scrambling around the house, searching for it. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/morbidology and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use my code morbidology to help make starting that good habit that much easier. Are you sick of the chaos that comes with spring cleaning? Say goodbye to the headache of misplaced items and hello to streamlined organization with Smart Labels, the ultimate solution for your storage needs. With Smart Labels, decluttering has never been easier. All you need to do is buy the Smart Labels QR labels on Amazon and then stick them on your storage bins. Then you simply download the app, scan the QR code, and effortlessly catalogue all of your belongings with names, descriptions, and even pictures. No more rummaging through boxes to find what you need. Everything is neatly organised and at your fingertips. This spring, reclaim your space and sanity with Smart Labels. Whether you're tidying up your closet, garage, or attic, Smart Labels makes the process a breeze. Just search on Amazon for Smart Labels, which is one word, and get started today. Joanna eventually unblocked David, hoping that she could reason with him, but he wouldn't listen. She advised him to see a psychiatrist, and David responded by telling her that he was going to come to Nottingham and kill himself in front of her. She was terrified of what he was capable of, and eventually David was blocked and banned from the forum. Joanna and Matthew decided that if David ever turned up at their flat again, they would immediately call police. It seemed that he had possibly gotten the message, but then in September, David reached out to Matthew with one final email. It read, "There's something I would like to give to you. I'm not going to say what it is, though, but you will love it." After learning about the disturbing behaviour of David, detectives were keen to learn more. When the couple's flat had been searched, it appeared as though Matthew had tried to write his name. The letters DAV were scrawled in blood on the side of the computer, presumably written by Matthew before he died. It was as if he was trying to name his killer. The detectives launched a net tracing operation, and it didn't take them long to figure out that David was a 21-year-old man named David Heiss, who lived close to Frankfurt in Germany. After Matthew was found dead, he had posted on Joanna's Facebook, "I will pray for you, Joe. You must be suffering. I'm sorry for causing you so much trouble lately. I hope you won't lose all your hope. We'll be there for you." David had also reached out to some other people on the forum. As soon as Matthew was killed, everybody on the forum suspected that David was involved. But that didn't deter him from contacting them. Among the people he contacted was David Quinn. He told him, "People are willing to go to the funeral, and seriously, if I knew the date, I would go there. You think I did it, and so do a few people, I believe." David Heiss was born on the 19th of June, 1987, in Frankfurt, West Germany, to a Bolivian mother and a German father. His childhood was marked by upheaval, beginning with his parents' divorce when he was just 6 years old. Following the divorce, David went to live with his grandmother, as his mother remarried and his father's presence in his life became sporadic. Raised primarily by his grandmother, David experienced a sense of isolation and detachment from his family. Despite living relatively close to his mother, she struggled to find the time for him, further contributing to his solitude. His father's absence exacerbated his feelings of loneliness, leaving him to navigate childhood largely on his own. Throughout his school years, David grappled with extreme shyness, earning him the label of an outsider among his peers. Even into adulthood at the age of 21, David's bedroom retained a distinctly childlike atmosphere, adorned with cartoon wallpaper, bunk beds, and a collection of Mr. Men books. While holding a job as an office junior, David's true sanctuary lay within the digital realm of his computer. He devoted countless hours to online interactions, especially on the forum established by Matthew and Joanna. Immersed in virtual worlds and global conversations, David found solace and connection within the confines of his screen. Despite an attempt to find purpose in military service by enrolling in the German army, David's tenure was short-lived. He was expelled after just 2 weeks, after he was deemed mentally unstable. Following his online interactions with Matthew and Joanna, David began weaving a fabricated narrative in his offline life. He told his colleagues he had a girlfriend from Nottingham and spun elaborate plans of relocating to be with her and pursuing studies in the area. But detectives were closing in on him, and on the 24th of September, David was tracked down near Frankfurt and arrested on suspicion of murder. After David's arrest, detectives delved deeper into his movements following his departure from Nottingham in July. They secured a search warrant for his home and came across blood-stained clothing and bags. His computer revealed even more significant findings connecting him to Matthew's murder. It was revealed that on the evening of the 11th of September, he booked a flight to Birmingham for the 18th. Subsequently, he revisited the love letter he had written for Joanna back in May, scrutinizing its contents. The night before his flight, David connected with his sister, requesting her to log on to the war's central website on the 19th. Detectives deduced that this was an attempt to establish an alibi, suggesting that he was online in Germany during the time of the murder. Further analysis of his computer actively uncovered alarming details. That same day, David had created 2 documents. One bore the title Confession, and it masqueraded as a suicide note allegedly written by Matthew. Within the note, Matthew had expressed a loss of love for Joanna and said goodbye to his family. While the note was traced to David's computer, its intricate knowledge of Matthew's family suggested a disturbing level of insight possessed by David. The second document was titled, I Made a Decision, and it was a suicide note written by himself. In the note, he said that Matthew had driven him to take his own life. The detectives continued in their investigation and learned that on the 18th of September, David caught a bus to Frankfurt Airport. He told his family that he was going to a party, but he flew to Birmingham via Amsterdam and arrived shortly after 9 p.m. that night. CCTV footage captured him catching a train to Birmingham and then walking over to David and Joanna's flat. In the CCTV footage, it was clear that he was wearing multiple layers of clothing, presumably to change out of the bloody clothing following the murder. David slept overnight on the roof of the flat. Joanna left for work the next morning just before 7 a.m. and at about 7:30 a.m, David climbed down from the roof. Some minutes later, Matthew was attacked and killed as he opened up the front door. Initially, David denied any involvement in Matthew's murder, claiming that he wasn't even in Nottingham at the time of the crime. He told detectives to look at his online activity to show that he was in Germany on the forum at the time. The detectives already knew that he had asked his sister to log on. When confronted with the weight of the evidence meticulously gathered by detectives, David eventually altered his narrative. According to David's revised account, he admitted to travelling to Nottingham and visiting Matthew and Joanna's flat that morning. He claimed that his initial intention was merely to beat Matthew up, He described knocking on the front door and said that when Matthew opened, he tried to punch him. According to David, Matthew turned around and ran back into the flat, and a fist fight ensued, but David said the punches weren't landing. He said that Matthew was being abusive to him, so he told him to shut up and listen. At this moment, David said the knife he had brought along with him slipped out of his waistband, and Matthew tried to grab it. David asserted that he only sought to defend himself by attempting to push Matthew's arms away, fearing potential harm. He recounted a chaotic struggle, alleging that he stumbled backwards and collided with the table, causing the knife to fall from Matthew's grasp. In David's version of events, he described thwarting Matthew's attempts to retrieve the knife by restraining him physically. He claimed that Matthew's desperate actions, including kicking him in the back, fueled his own determination to secure the weapon first, fearing for his own safety. He said that he was so afraid that when he finally got his hands on the knife, he stabbed Matthew repeatedly. He said that he only stopped when Matthew stopped struggling. After David's extradition back to the United Kingdom, he was charged with the murder of Matthew on the 26th of November. He was ordered to stand trial, which commenced on the 28th of April 2009 at Nottingham Crown Court. Accompanied by his defence team, David entered the courtroom to take his place alongside them. The public gallery swelled with Matthew's grieving loved ones as the trial proceedings unfolded. During the opening statements, prosecutors presented their case to the jury. Prosecutor Sean Smith outlined David's disturbing obsession with Joanna and detailed his alleged plan to kill Matthew while staging it to appear as a suicide. Prosecutor Smith informed the jury that the printed suicide note was discovered in David's suitcase as well as on his computer. However, because of the frenzied nature of the murder, it was apparent that Matthew hadn't taken his own life. The prosecutor said that David then resorted to ransacking the home to give the appearance the murder was a robbery gone wrong. According to the prosecution's narrative, David waited on the rooftop of the flat overnight, observing Joanna leaving for work the next morning before launching his attack. He stated, "It's the prosecution's case that Matthew had absolutely no chance at that door, where that blood is. He was stabbed right away by this defendant." After Matthew was dead, David changed out of his bloody clothing and stole a pair of Matthew's shoes and a baseball cap. He then embarked on his return trip to Germany and discarded the murder weapon along the way. David's defence wasn't that he hadn't carried out the murder, but instead that he had acted in self-defence. Joanna was the first witness to testify on behalf of the prosecution, and she detailed David's obsession with her. She said that when he first showed up at their flat and slept overnight, she was petrified. She described going into the bathroom and crying. After he left, the uneasy feeling never left her. She said to the jury, "I was afraid that he was going to turn up again, and I didn't know what he was capable of." Joanna testified that she began to blank David, hoping that he would get the hint. She was asked why she didn't just block him, and she replied, "I was trying to calm things down. If I had blocked him, it would have made it worse and made him come to Nottingham." Some of the other users of the forum testified against David, detailing to the jury his disturbing obsession and comments about wanting to erase Matthew. David himself testified on his own behalf, telling the jury the same thing that he had told detectives. He said that he had brought the knife along with him that day because he wanted to be prepared. He testified, "He might attack me and get the upper hand." He said that it was his intention to beat Matthew up so badly that he needed to go to hospital. When he was shown a photograph of Matthew's computer with the letters DAV smeared in blood, he seemed surprised. He denied that he had written it, and said that Matthew couldn't have written it either because he was dead when he left. Ultimately, the jury sided with the prosecution and found David Heiss guilty of the murder of Matthew Pike. The sentencing phase followed, and the judge sentenced him to life in prison with a minimum of 18 years. In handing down the sentence, the judge told David, "The fact that your motive for murder was so bizarre doesn't make your killing of Matthew any less serious." He said it was evident that David was unable to cope with rejection, telling him, "I have no doubt that at some stage, you decided that Matthew had to die, and that your killing of him involved a substantial degree of both planning and premeditation, which is a significant aggravating factor." Following David's sentencing to life in prison, disturbing revelations surfaced regarding his persistent fixation on Joanna. Despite his incarceration, he continued to harbour delusions of a future with her, evidenced by a letter he penned from behind bars. In the letter, he said he hoped they could be reunited. Meanwhile, Joanna steadfastly maintained the War Central's forms in the years following Matthew's tragic murder. She dedicated herself to preserving his memory, creating a heartfelt tribute page where visitors could share their cherished recollections of him. The outpouring of affection within the forum testified to the enduring impact Matthew had on the community, united by their shared passion for the video game. Each year, Joanna wished Matthew happy anniversary and happy birthday. Matthew's mother even joined the forum so that she could post on his wall. However, in a bittersweet turn of events in 2018, Joanna announced the closure of the forum, marking the end of an era. With a poignant message, she wrote, "On the 1st of March 2018, War Central will close and become another corner of the internet remembered only by the membership and archiving websites. I'd like to thank you for all the good times and good friendships that were formed over the 10 years War Central existed. There were some fun times, and they'll be fondly remembered. Have a great life, Joe." The intricate web of the internet has not only interconnected the world, but also laid bare the depths of human obsession. David Heiss found himself obsessed with a woman he met online, but despite her relentless rejection, his fixation only intensified. In the end, David's obsession took over his life, leading him to Nottingham, where David's obsession ended Matthew Pike's life. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my newest supporter up on Patreon, Beth. You can join us up on Patreon for as little as $1 a month, and there are absolutely no obligations. You can cancel your subscription at any time. The link to Patreon is in the show notes, or alternatively, you can download the app and search for Morbidology, or search on your internet browser. As mentioned last week, Morbidology is now up on YouTube. The episodes are presented in a documentary style, along with photographs and videos relevant to each case, along with some videos. So please head on over to YouTube, type in Morbidology, and subscribe to the channel. It'll really help out. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read some true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.